Today's show is brought to you by HelloFresh. Please visit HelloFresh.com and use the promo code LOC to save $35 off your first week of deliveries.
Today's episode is also sponsored by the new Podster magazine, P-O-D-S-T-E-R. You can find it online at shelfmediagroup.com. You can find out about all of the new podcasts in Podster magazine. They have interviews with both popular and undiscovered podcasters, and I think we are both of those. We are both popular and undiscovered, depending on who you ask, as well as reviews and recommendations of new shows. So sign up for a free subscription today, shelfmediagroup.com. Welcome back.
This is Amano Amano.
Shit is getting real.
Now we just have to see how it ends.
Coming on your back is one thing, but coming on your doorstep...
It's about gratuitous violence, and that's kind of my thing.
I've got some information that kind of runs counter to that.
Then don't say it.
I don't want to brag, Ray, but I'm fucking awesome. I play that to myself every day. It's my alarm clock that wakes me up in the morning.
I'm an American hamster.
We don't know how much of this is accurate.
Did I say I'm an American hamster or gangster?
Hamster, right? God, Rob said. Rob said he looked that up. That's DJ Rob Irwin, Doctor Who podcaster of note. Did that for us. Thank you, Rob. That was very funny.
He told me he checked it.
You said you're a hamster. I don't know why you said that.
What context would cause me to confess that?
Limoncello, basically, I think is what it was.
Probably what it was. Probably my own personal blend. But anyway, I'm sure I meant gangster.
Welcome back to The Life of Augustus, episode 40.
Wow.
Whoa. Before we get into that, I promised you I'd tell you this story that happened last night. So about 6:15 last night, I'm talking to Fox, trying to ask him what he wants for dinner. He scratches me on the eye. So I grab him, I throw him into his bed, his cot in his room, close the door, time out. I go back in 5 minutes later, the door won't open. First, I think he's sitting behind it, but then he's calling out to me, and I can tell he's in the cot, which is a little bit to the left.
Daddy,
I can't get it open. The doorknob is turning, but it's not giving. The bolt is not moving, and this door doesn't have a lock on it. There's no lock on either side. So I spend a few minutes trying to budget nothing. So get some tools. Chrissy goes, "What's going on?" I tell her the door won't open. She freaks out immediately, goes into major...
I was going to ask you your emotional state at this
point. I'm cool. I'm calm. I know this is... I'm going to work this out. What would Caesar do? I'm going to circumvallate the wall, the door, and lay siege to it if I have to,
It
takes me 3 months. I'm going to get in. Doesn't matter what's going to happen. I'm getting in there, right? Just a question of when and how. But she goes into major anxiety attacks. So I'm like calm the fuck down. So I get some tools out. And now, one thing everyone should know about me, the world's worst handyman.
Famously,
many, many years ago, previous marriage, previous house, living in Melbourne, one weekend, buy a TV. I get a corner bracket for the bedroom and put a TV, back in the days when we had, small TVs. Put it up on the wall in the bedroom, come home at the end of the day, it's on the floor with half the wall. So that's my handyman capability. So anyway, I have put doorknobs indoors before and that kind of stuff. So I take the doorknob off. I'm trying to get in, can't get in. Just can't figure out any way to get in to the guts of this thing to get it out. Meanwhile, Chrissy's still freaking out. She calls 000, which is our equivalent of 911. They say, "Oh, we're going to send the cops out." I'm like, what the fuck are the cops going to do? Like, shoot it down? Like,
shoot this kid, get down. There's going to be some flying lead pretty soon.
Then I tell her to call a locksmith. She calls an emergency locksmith. Guy says, "Yeah, he'll be here in 15 minutes. Meanwhile, I'm still dicking around. Nothing's going on. The cops turn up, ask what's going on. Anyone in danger? No, we don't think so.
Right.
Are you black? No, I'm white. All right, then it's okay. So won't have to throw you in the paddy wagon. The locksmith then calls back 15 minutes later and goes, "Nah, I can't make it." So she calls another locksmith. "Nah, I can't make it." The cop calls a couple of locksmiths. They're like, "Nah, we can't get there." I get a jigsaw out, like a saw, electric saw, and try and saw the thing out. But you know, it's in the hardwood of the door, and I don't want to. And it's just going to be too. And I'm cutting into the hitting the door jamb, trying to get out. Anyway, I cut a big square around the doorknob on my side, and then Chrissy says, "I'm going to kick it down." And now Chrissy's got a damaged vertebrae in the lower back, and I'm like, "That's ridiculous." No. She goes, "No, it won't hurt me." I'm going, "Like, that's ridiculous. There are two men here, me and one of the cops. There's a male and female cop team." So anyway. And I'm a little bit worried about kicking it in because I know it's going to scare the shit out of Fox if we have to do that. He's just near the door. But anyway, the cop, male cop, says, "Hey, you want me to kick it down?" And I say, "Yeah, you want, go for it." And also get a look better on the landlord. Not doing a lot for my manliness file here.
He's always wanted to do that. He probably says to the female, "Hey, videotape this. Watch this. I've always wanted to do this."
Yeah, like, you know, what's the point of being a cop if you don't get to kick some doors in? He's seen The Shield. He thinks he's Vic Mackey. And it looks better on the landlord report when I say, "Hey, you need to buy me a new door." If I can say, "Well, I didn't kick it in; the cop did. You got an issue with it? No. Talk to the cop, right?" Anyway, so the cop kicks the door in, and because I'd sawed the doorknob, you know, around the door, it came out really easy. Didn't have to break the door jamb; it just the came out on our side. So, kid's fine. He'd been trapped in there for about 45 minutes. He was panicky, having the door kicked in. Would have scared the shit out of him too. So anyway, that was our night. That was the start of my night last night. And then I realised that we were supposed to be recording Cold War today, but I'd spent the week preparing for Caesar for reasons I really can't explain, apart from the fact that my brain is melting right now. Podcasts, book projects, documentaries, speaking at conferences.
Yeah. Kicking indoors, cutting doors.
My brain is melting.
It could have been worse. You could have said, "Okay, after preparing for a week for Caesar, we are now going to just fuck it and record the Cold War and just somehow stick Caesar in there and justify it all."
Good thing we did that interview with Campbell Craig, which was supposed to get us ahead of the curve, but in fact is just keeping us on the curve. But let's get on with Augustus. Picking up where we left off in August 29 BCE. He's back, baby. He's back.
Yes.
Triumphs have happened, and he is doling out the cash to the people. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, Shane Jordan, I think, on Facebook said, "I hope you're going to talk about what Octavian / Augustus did to, you know, keep the people in Rome happy with him at some point." And I said, "Dude, that's pretty much all we've got to talk about for the next 40 episodes. The rest of this season is how does Octavian keep the peace?"
Exactly. Yeah, and the point that we should make is that for us, this is going to happen pretty quick. We're about to record three shows. But the entire year that we're going to be talking about, even though it's a gradual process, Caesar is not only appeasing the people as much as he possibly can afford to, he's taking things back to the way they were before all of this craziness started. So he's making the people happy.
Not quite.
Yeah.
How it was.
Almost.
With one or two fairly major differences,
slightly major exceptions.
It's like my door that I kicked in, took a photo of a door and sort of pasted it over the top of the hole that's in that door now.
That's pretty smart. That's pretty smart.
It's just like it looks exactly like. It's just like it was. What happens if I poke it? Don't poke. Don't scratch. What the
stand
fuck?
Over there.
Stand, if you stand back far enough.
Over there.
It looks exactly like it used to do before Caesar crossed the Rubicon.
Turn your head. Yeah. So he's going to go through a lot of motions, but again, they know what they're doing. It's going to appear, I should have been more specific, it's going to appear as if they're genuinely, sincerely, wholeheartedly, not really, going back to the way things were before Caesar crossed the Rubicon, before Pompey was made consul without a colleague, which again was totally illegal. They're trying to go back before that time, and they're going to put a very good paint job on this during the year that they're consuls together.
So would you say that they the Senate is going to be back in the saddle?
I'm back in the saddle again. I'm back in the saddle
fucking Aerosmith in the day, man. Like that bluesy groove. It doesn't get any better than that for my money.
I'd like to alter my answer. The Senate is going to be the part of the body right under and behind the saddle.
Right.
It's close, though. It's closer than it's been in a while.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't been able to see the fucking saddle for 20 years.
for where they were, which was under the horse, getting pissed on.
So Octavian, at this point, gives 100 denarii, which is 400 sesterces, to every adult male citizen.
Damn.
Got to be a white Roman. But, adult white man, basically. Right. 100 denarii. Now, just to remind people, we've at various stages, we've talked about, you know, sort of tried to give some perspective on how much a denarii or a sesterce is worth. I think you mentioned something in a recent episode again. But just to remind people, in the early empire, so 15 years after this, 30 years, 40, 50, I don't know when the early empire begins, really. Does it begin with Augustus or does it begin with Tiberius? I don't know. But anyway, this time, one denarius was the daily wage, according to a variety of contemporaneous sources. In the early days of Julius Caesar's time in Gaul, a legionary received an annual salary of 125 denarii.
Mm-hmm.
He later doubled it to 225 denarii, what's 100 denarii between friends? So 100 denarii was worth about 3 months' salary for the average person. And now Octavian just gives that out to every adult male citizen.
Yeah, so it's almost like you could take the next whatever X amount of days off, but as we're about to see, very few people are going to have time to take time off, even though they've got the money, because there's going to be a lot of works going on, which we've touched on some point. But see, then Caesar, because other people have done this before, Julius Caesar had done this before, other people had done it before, they left money in their will, whatever. But then this Caesar, like you said, trying to win over the people as much as he possibly can, takes even this tradition, this example, one step further. To all the boys of citizens in Rome, they're able to get some money as well, but it's not in Caesar's name, even though that would be smart of him. He is thinking about the future, even though he's in his early 30s. He's had some health issues, and he's going to continue to have some health issues. So he's already thinking about the future. So when he gives the boys, the sons of citizens, some money as well, it's in the name of his nephew, Marcellus. Then he calls it the people's spoils of war. So again, he's giving it to the males, he's giving it to the children. This is unprecedented. And again, the people are just pretty darn happy that, one, there's no civil war. Two, they all suddenly have a boatload of cash. When is the last time those two things have happened together?
Marcellus was Gaius Claudius Marcellus Minor. He was the son of Gaius Claudius Marcellus Minor, so he would have been Marcellus Minor Minor, Minor Squared, M2, they used to call him. Hey, MMM. His father was a former Roman consul, former husband of Octavia, Octavian's sister. And of course, we all know that later on, Marcellus grew up to become a gangster and fight promoter.
Right. Night of the fight, you may feel a slight sting. I just can't see. That's pride fucking with you. Fuck pride. Pride only hurts. It never helps.
Word.
You fight through that shit. Because a year from now, when you're kicking it in the Caribbean, you're going to say to yourself, Marcellus Wallace was right.
I play that clip to Ray before every show. I say, Ray, at some point in the show, I'm going to insult your ass. You might feel a slight sting. That's pride fucking with you.
No, it's the insult.
Fuck pride. But a year from now, when you're kicking it on the beaches of Queensland, you're going to say, Cameron was right.
Cameron was right. That's exactly. And I've gotten really good at muting through the tears. So I think it's a win-win for everyone.
You know, it makes your marriage go better too now. Whenever your wife says, really, you call that a dick? You're tougher. You don't cry for as long.
My pride has got scabs all over it from healed scars, so I want to thank you, Cam.
When she says, is it in yet? She says, turn around and let me strap it on. So he also gives a gift, Octavian that is, right, of 1,000 sesterces.
Okay.
To the 120,000, according to some counts, veteran soldiers around the colonies in Italy and overseas. 1,000 sesterces each.
Damn. What's 1,000 times 120,000? Besides a shit ton?
One bajillion, I think is technically what that's referred to.
Yeah.
So again, this is Cleopatra's money, basically.
Yeah. That's her credit card. Yeah.
Yes.
Her bank account.
Yeah. This is what he came home from Egypt with, was not just enough money to pay off his debts, not just enough money to settle all of the land deals that he'd done and all of his promises in terms of bonuses to his armies over the last 15, 18 years, 13, 14 years, whatever it is, since he got to Rome and started to pull together an army. He's just able to dole out cash left, right, and center. And
like it ain't nothing.
And even if people didn't like the fact that he was a quasi-dictator,
right,
if the quasi-dictator's just handing out cash and making life better. And there are plenty of contemporary examples. Like I was reading an article, I think I sent it to you, a list of beloved dictators or benign dictators over the last sort of 50 years around the world. And there's quite a lot of them. Surprising a number of dictators still around today and have been around in the last 50 years that you don't hear a lot about. And my favorite one is Lee Kuan Yew in Singapore, who passed away, I think, in the last 12 months, turned Singapore from basically a one-boat island into a major economic powerhouse in the area. Absolutely a dictator. Was in power for, I don't know, 50, 60 years. I think he was in power. I think he came to power in the same year as Fidel Castro. And he died last year still in power. I think he'd sort of quasi-passed it on to one of his sons, but he was
still there.
The man behind the throne. But generally speaking, people tend to speak very highly of Lee Kuan Yew internationally, and I think even a lot of Singaporeans, because he turned it into an economic powerhouse. People made money, a lot of them. Very strict in terms of policing and keeping crime down, and all. If you got caught selling drugs, they chop your hands off and shit like that. So,
and there will be more of that in the upcoming episodes.
Hand chopping.
Yes.
I've been speaking to one of our listeners down in Melbourne, James Caffin, who's a tattoo artist. I posted a link to his thing, and painter. I posted a link to his thing on Facebook. And we were talking about tattoos, and he mentioned severed hands. I think it was with Kelly or somebody on Facebook was having a discussion. And I made mention that the Riley or O'Reilly, Rileys are all O'Reillys, family, traditional Scottish family emblem, Irish family emblem, sorry, not Scottish, Irish, is a severed hand with blood dripping from it.
God, what?
Being held up by two lions. Yeah, that's the family, the Riley family emblem is a severed hand with blood dripping from it. And our motto is, fuck with us, this is what happens to you. No, I'll tell you the story, because it's a great story. So the story is that back in like the 11th or 12th century, a Riley, or Rahalach as he was a general for, I think, for a Irish king. They fought a battle against their enemies, whoever the Rahalach's king was, I can't remember, they won. And there were two of his generals that he wanted to reward. It was an O'Reilly and an O'Connor. And he had a castle on an island, a little bit out, in a lake, a river or somewhere. And they were on the mainland. He said, whoever lays hand on that castle first gets to be king of this area. So they both jump in their boats and they're rowing and they're rowing. And the O'Connors... The O'Connors were hadn't been smoking as many cigars. They're a little bit fitter, a little bit, and they, he's getting closer. They're running towards the castle. The O'Connors a little bit ahead. The Riley puts his hand down, pulls out his sword, chops his left hand off, picks it up with his right hand, throws it at the castle, lays hand on the castle, wins, becomes king.
Woo!
Booyah! That's how we Rileys do, motherfuckers. But not except I would get one of my slaves to cut off their hands and go, hey, you. Yeah. That's you. You belong to me. It's as good as a Riley. Same thing, really.
Your hand looks like my hand. Come here.
I'll just pull my sleeve down over mine. They'll think it's my hand. No one will ever do it.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about getting that as a tattoo when I'm down in Melbourne next. Oh, get James to do a big severed hand.
Well, if you're going to tell your story, I have to tell mine. The family crest for my my mother's family, which is from Charleston, South Carolina, is a man on one knee, and there's a woman standing there, and he's got a bunch of flowers that he's thrusting up to her. He's proposing to her. It's his cousin. She says yes. They get married, but it's our family crest. We're pretty proud of that. That's the Judys of South Carolina. So that's my story.
I think that basically sums us up. You and me, the difference between us. I'll cut off your fucking hand and rub the blood all over your face. You're
and
like
I will,
getting down now, on one knee and holding up a bouquet of flowers to everyone.
Now my cousin, if I ever get a chance. But anyway, so, you know, come see, come saw, whatever, you know. But, hey, I do want to mention something before we move on. I do want to mention something about Gaius Claudius Marcellus Octavia's 14-year-old son at this point. Remember, I think it was the last episode, he's having his third triumph, which Caesar actually participates in. Marcellus is on the right-hand horse. Nero is on the left-hand horse. And as we know, the right hand is the place of honor for as far as the Romans are concerned. The reason Marcellus was on the right-hand horse was because he's the son of Octavia. He's actually got, to a degree, Caesar's blood running through him. So again, Caesar's in his early 30s, but he's thinking about the future. He starts grooming this kid. So that's why this kid, who's got his blood, is already being eyed for much greater things. And as we're going to find out as the series goes on, as he grows up, there's going to be a little bit of tension between Marcellus, who's growing up, and Agrippa, who's used to being the number two guy. So that's coming in the future. But Caesar's already got an eye on this young kid who was supposedly intelligent, good-looking, hard-working, but he was kind of grooming him for the future of the next generation. So the part of the unofficial royal family, if you will, unofficially the royal family of Rome.
Yeah. Well, I think, relatively officially by now. Getting back to this gift of 1,000 sesterces, though, that he gives out to all of the veterans that have been settled. This is a good idea because apparently back when Sulla settled veterans on farms, a lot of them got themselves into debt. They weren't able to make a go of the farming.
They weren't farmers. They were soldiers.
Yeah. Well, I imagine a lot of them came off of farms at some point. But for whatever reason, they weren't able to make a success of the farms, got themselves into debt, and then became a source of militant support for guys like Catiline and the conspiracies. So Octavian's thinking ahead here. He's giving these guys a couple of years' income,
right,
to give them a chance to get up and running, get the farm up and going, so they don't just crash and burn and end up as a bunch of disgruntled soldiers that are available for hire, mercenaries for hire, I guess. So, you know, he's thinking. Somebody's thinking, whether it's him or Agrippa or Maecenas or somebody. But somebody's learning the lessons of history and thinking, what can we do differently to increase our chances of success long term?
Yeah, to not fuck this up. So again, yeah, but that is the next, that is the theme of the next three episodes. We are going to give you ad nauseum examples of the deft hand of Caesar as he makes decisions, as he's moderate in his decisions. He's doing one thing with one hand and saying something else or whatever. But again, this is going to happen over and over again. And he's not going to screw up because Sulla did a pretty good job. He just didn't think things through. And obviously he retired and he left office and he left all this trouble for everybody else. But suddenly in Rome, when all these men lose their money or they're in debt, they have to sell their land or whatever, suddenly you've got a bunch of ex-military guys with nothing to lose. And so when someone comes along and says, follow me and I will cancel all your debts, they're going to do that. That's nothing but trouble. So even though this Caesar is settling far more men than what these Caesar had, than what Sulla had, like you said, he's thinking about it and he wants to put laws and practices and traditions into place so they don't end up screwing everything up like what happened to after Sulla left and after he retired.
It's an investment in the future stability.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Of Rome and Italy. And I was thinking it's just exactly like the US today where your veterans, when they come back, are just
given
terrific pension, terrific health care, got jobs lined up for them. They're given land. They're really well looked after. And I think that's obviously something that the U.S. Congress has learned from their study of Octavian.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go off on my soapbox for just for like 30 seconds. I'm not a Republican, but I know Republicans are generally pro-war and they like to solve problems through the military. And I get that. But my thing is, if you're going to be pro-military all the way. You're going to use these young kids. You're going to go over there and kill a whole bunch of people who probably don't deserve to be killed or whatever. But when you bring your soldiers back and whatever is left of them, treat them like kings. Take good care of them. I don't care if it's they don't have to pay taxes for the rest of their lives or they should just be able to walk into a hospital and get bumped into the front of the line, whatever. But if you're going to be pro-military or whatever, not that I am condoning that, but oh my God, treat these guys, you know, the way they should, because my son is in the Marines, my father's in the military, my nephew, my brother, whatever. And I work in a clinic where the Veterans Administration calls us all the time and this guy's got a problem with his ear. And I'm like, okay, I unfortunately can't see him until November. They're like, okay. And I'm like, did you not hear me? We can't see him until November. But it's better than what their clinics can do. So to them, it's an early appointment. Just fucking do better with the people. If you're going to put them in harm's way, take good care of them when they get back. And I'm finished now.
I was just talking to one of my sisters the other day. Her partner is Australian military and got... Mm-hmm. I think busted his knee, I think, in a training exercise. And she was talking about the fact that he's been waiting like 3 or 4 years to get his pension to come through.
Jesus.
They're still fighting it. The Australian army is still fighting, paying off his pension, delaying it as long as possible.
Yeah.
Evil fuckers. We got to do a little promotional bit for an advertiser. Podster magazine. You heard of Podster magazine?
I have.
Oh shit! How'd you hear about that?
No, I just searched around for you and me on the internet because with my pants off. But anyway, I have run across that once or twice.
Well, Podster magazine is a magazine that's been going for, I don't know, a few months, 6 months maybe now. They feature interviews with popular and undiscovered podcasters as well as reviews and recommendations. So maybe a good place to find your next podcast. Nice. You'll also, if you get this month's edition, you'll see a full page ad for our Cold War show, which is why I know about them and I'm talking about them. You can get a free subscription to Podster. It's like a digital online magazine-y thing, not one of these old-fashioned paper mag. Well, maybe it is. I don't even know, but I looked at it digitally. Anyway, go to shelfmediagroup.com and check it out. I had a read of it, learned a lot of things about a lot of podcasts that are up and running. It's good. Very good. So there you go. Cool. Shelfmediagroup.com. Discover your next podcast.
Nice. That was a good commercial.
Thanks. You like that? I don't think I even swore in that one.
Feel free to take out the totally inappropriate thing I said at the very beginning. Just cut that out. But anyway, so let me ask a question before we move on. Before we move on, should we cover the first for the lack of a better word, governor of Egypt, or, you know, because we're starting to leave that period behind. Do we want to talk about Gallus at all, or whatevs?
I do have that in my notes, but it's okay. Down a bit.
Okay, that's fine. Just wanted to make sure we didn't forget him. Because
right. No, we're not going to forget. We're going to cover all that. Yeah.
Okay, Jerry Seinfeld. What's next?
Oh, good one. See, that's what I like. I've been trying to teach Ray, instead of just jumping ahead to some fucking random point, to check right. with me. For, like, you know, what's yes. next? Like, yeah. 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 Like Martin yeah. Sheen on The West Wing, President Bartlet. What's next?
I've been conditioned.
Thank God. Holy shit. I just Googled Ray and Cam, and I found a website, raycam.com. Raycam Cooperative Center. We are all Raycam.
What the fuck is that? It's not us.
It's in Vancouver. Raycam.com. I think I own rayandcam.com, but raycam.com.
That's smart.
Community projects, cooperative community center. That's not we us. Need to that's, go there, man. They should be. We should just rock up and go. We're Ray Cam.
We own this place. Woo.
Yeah, we're here.
They need to advertise with us. That's right.
Yeah, see what happens. Advertise with us. Yeah.
See how long it takes them to catch on. We are not that Ray and that Cam.
I wanted to drill down on some temples and stuff that was going on. We mentioned in an earlier episode that around about this period, 29 BCE, the temple to the divine Julius was mm-hmm. finally open. The triumvirs had announced it in 42 BCE, so it's been in the works for 13 years.
Which is a lucky number.
Yeah, war going on and probably not a lot of people around to build it when they're all right. off fighting civil wars. But anyway, it finally got built. It measured 26.97 meters by 30 meters. And I was surprised to learn that it remained largely intact until the late 15th century.
And why was that? What happened then, Cam?
Well, a bunch of people that, I don't know if you've heard of them, but they get called the Christians, decided, you know what, this 1,500-year-old temple to the divine Julius, let's right. steal all of the marble and stone and use it to build some churches and palaces.
Aw, that's fucked up right there.
Fuck.
Thanks, Christians.
Thanks a lot, Christians.
That building wasn't doing anything to you. Well, maybe it was. It was actually probably the exact opposite of what it means to be a Christian. Okay, so I can see it now, but still, as a historical monument, so, that's tough.
Well, you know, have a little bit of polytheistic, I don't know, live and let live.
Yeah.
Turn the other cheek. Isn't that what Jesus said?
You know, yeah, except do for this shit's others. Expensive.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You want people to come and pull your fucking temples down? Really?
I think it's do unto others before they do to you. That's how I was taught it.
Yeah.
As a Christian.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
But part of the cement core of the platform survives. And I know a lot of our listeners have been to Rome. The altar of Julius Caesar is still there. It's just a mound of concrete, really.
Right.
But
nice.
people still to this day go and lay flowers and stuff on it. Definitely in 2018 when we do the Ray and Cam tour of Amor.
That's right.
That we've been pushing for since last year. But we're now if you're not on our Facebook, we're re-announcing Tour of Europe. Middle of 2018, so somewhere around the middle of the year, we want to do Rome, Paris, Florence, for reasons that will become evident in the next few months. Athens, Alexandria,
yes,
and maybe Tony Kynaston suggested Moscow. For the Cold War show.
Oh, wow. That would be freaking awesome. So, look, everybody, you bag your lunch for the next 2 years. You save up the $5 to $12 you're going to spend on lunch at work or whatever. That will hopefully, and your children's lunch, they'll be fine. And that will give you enough money to get you to come with us. You've got 2 years to prepare No excuses.
No excuses. And if that's not enough, you know, do a quick BJ for somebody in the office down in the car park at lunchtime for a 50. Like 50 for a lunchtime BJ. I reckon that's a pretty reasonable deal.
Yeah, 25 for hand job. That's the going rate where I'm at. Just one thing.
That's what you have to pay Heather.
Something like that. Look, don't you worry about my marriage. I got this under control, okay? You don't need to know the inner dynamics. Anyway, so like you were saying, during the Renaissance is when they started pulling Caesar's temple down. I just wanted to mention one thing, even though we've already talked about the temple in previous shows. I just think it's funny that the temple of Caesar was the only temple to be entirely dedicated to a cult of a comet. So the comet was supposedly the soul of the defiled Julius Caesar and the symbol of the new birth of this Augustus who was to lead the new Roman Empire. So again, temple for a comet because it was a dead guy's soul. So perfectly makes sense. I can now see why the Christians would want to take it down. But as far as a historian goes, bad form.
Inside it was a colossal statue of Julius Caesar, veiled as the Pontifex Maximus, with a star on his head and bearing the Litus Augural staff in his right hand. And when the doors of the temple were left open, it was possible to see the statue from the Roman Forum main square.
Wow. Wow.
Imagine that. You're in the Forum, you're looking up, Big Julie, looking down.
Literally Big Julie.
Now, I looked up this Litus, L-I-T-U-U-S, Litus. I'm not sure how the fuck I pronounced that.
Right.
Augural staff, because I'd never really read about that before. The Litus was a crooked wand. It looked a bit like a hockey stick. Used as a cult instrument in ancient Roman religion by the augurs to mark out a ritual space in the sky.
Ah.
And then
going back to the comet.
It was called a templum. And the passage of birds through this templum indicated divine favor or disfavor for any given undertaking. And I knew you'd like that because it's about the birds. Litus was also then used as a symbol of office for the College of the Augurs to mark them out as a priestly group. The augur, of course, was a priest in the ancient Roman religion, and also they were an official in Rome at the time. They had like an official role. The main role was the practice of augury, interpreting the will of the gods by studying the flight of birds.
Because that's
whether they were flying alone. Yeah, whether they're flying alone or in groups, what noises they make as they fly, the direction they're flying in, what kind of birds they are.
And did they poop on anybody? Were they fighting?
Yeah. And this was known as taking the auspices.
Darn.
Just as a reminder.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
In the inner chamber of the temple, before we go on, was a famous painting by Apelles, who was a famous painter. We'll get to him in a second. The painting was a Venus Anadyomene. Anadyomene. Let's go with that. Anadyomene. Sure. One of the depictions of the goddess Venus. But supposedly, the model for this painting of Venus was Campaspe, a mistress of Alexander the Great.
Get out of here.
Now, listeners to our Alexander series may be wondering what I was wondering when I read that, which was fucking who? I don't remember ever talking about a Campaspe.
No.
When we, you know, we're doing our Alexander show. We never mentioned her, and that's because there is no Campaspe in the five major sources of the life of Alexander. None of the ancient sources mention him until Pliny, I think Lucian of Samosata, they mention him, and Robin Lane Fox just thinks it was some sort of legend that developed sort of in Roman times about some mistress, you know. Apparently Campaspe was a prominent citizen of Larissa in Thessaly, and she supposedly initiated the young Alexander in the ways of love.
Oh, nice.
Love.
Wow.
But, yeah, doesn't turn up in any of the old sources. But Apelles, the painter, lived in 332 to 329 BCE. Hey, that's not very long. He must have painted this painting.
Painted through puberty.
He was three when he died. I mean, that's he fucking didn't fuck around. This guy was born, painted, did sculptures, died.
He rolled in paint. He rolled himself in paint and then rolled over a piece of paper. Boom, done.
Yeah. I think I was high when I painted. I wrote these notes. He painted it somewhere around this period anyway. So he was a contemporary of Alexander. It's considered, you know, that famous mosaic in Pompeii of the Battle of Issus, where you kind of have Alexander with the curly hair coming out and you've got Darius on the other side.
Right.
Well, that is thought by historians to be a copy of the original painting by Apelles.
Damn.
But anyway, so he did this painting of Venus that was based on Alexander's mistress, supposedly. Anyway, Octavian sees this painting when he's in Alexandria, takes it back to Rome with him, and hangs it in the temple of the divine Julius.
Right. So he took all the gold and a painting that he really, really liked.
Yeah.
I guess you can do whatever you want. It's all his.
You got a problem with that?
No, sir. No, sir.
Anyone mind if I take this painting over here? Anyone? I've got the nose of Alexander's corpse in my pocket. I'm taking that.
Too.
I'm sticking that on the statue of Julius Caesar. I'm going to take this painting as well.
If you have a problem, please submit a petition to the royal bodyguard right over there, sharpening their swords. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, then on the 1st of January, 28 BCE, Octavian began his sixth consulship.
Woo!
This time, his co-consul is...
his number two, Agrippa. But keep in mind...
does number two work for?
Well... he works for the Senate now, I guess. He's a consul.
Yes.
And, you know, this is Octavian's sixth consulship, as I said, but this time, for the first time in many, many years, he's actually in Rome.
That's always nice.
Yeah. A couple of things are different about this consulship. One, he's in Rome on the 1st of January, so he can perform the traditional ceremonies to kick it off. Well, there was another big difference, and what was that? Right.
Well, the other thing I just want to mention real quick, just if you, for those of you keeping score, Gaius Marius was consul seven times. Just like FDR's last term, he does not finish his seventh consulship, slightly dies, but just keep that in mind. He has been consul seven times. Let's see. So for the other thing that I thought, and we've been over this before, but these guys would literally be consul for one day, and then they would select Suffolk consuls, and that was just a way to reward a lot of their friends, a lot of their allies, so they could be consul for a very short time, and then the next guy would come up. But it would look good, so you can say, yes, I was one of the consuls of Rome. But as we are going to see over the years, that has, if anything, cheapened the office, the meaning of the office. Of to actually be a consul doesn't mean as much because someone else is making the decisions. But these guys, and again, this is some brilliant stuff being done by Caesar. Not only are they consul, but they are going to stay consuls through the entire year. They're not going to give it over to anybody. They're going to be there for the entire year of 28. They've got a lot of things they need to do. They're going to work in hand, and they are going to, at least on the surface, bring back a lot of the traditions of the Senate and of the consulship. Caesar is taking this very seriously to pretend to respect all the senators. That's very nice of him.
And I've actually got a recording of his first day in the office.
All right.
I don't give shitty jobs. If a good man comes to me and says, thank you, David, for the opportunity and continued support in the work-related arena, but I've done that, I want to better myself, I want to move on, then I can make that dream come true too, a.k.a. for you. The point is, you talk the talk, you do not walk the walk, vis-a-vis, you have not yet passed your forklift driver's test. The man who gives the jobs in the warehouse is a personal friend of mine. All right? I know the man for the job. Sammy, you old slag. It's the Brentmeister General. Have you advertised for the forklift driver's job?
No, good. Don't bother.
I've got the man here. He's perfect. As he passed his forklift driver's tests, he gives the tests.
Yeah.
He's first aid trained, yeah. We'll get a CV over to you this afternoon. I'm seeing you Sunday, aren't I? For my sins.
Oh, is Elaine? She left you yet? Yeah. All right, see you then.
She has left him, I forgot about that.
And that is how they were doing it. They were making this shit happen. The Caesarmeister.
Have you watched that, the British version of The Office?
Oh, yeah. It got to the point where it was uncomfortable. Oh, my God. It was like, but I loved it.
Got to the point. It's uncomfortable from the get-go.
Well, yeah.
Gold. Absolutely.
He cringed. I was cringing. I spent a whole entire show cringing. I was tired by the time it was over.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ray and Heather's Corner. We are here today with the help of HelloFresh.com to make your lives easier. Like you, our daily lives are packed with work and chores. Then we, like you, get to come home and make dinner. Well, that's about to become the easiest part of your day. HelloFresh.com knows there's a chef in everyone.
Even my husband.
Right. And they want to help you bring it out. Tonight we tried the herby pan-seared chicken with farro, tomatoes, and fresh mozzarella.
And it was fantastic.
Oh yes. There are only 6 steps to prepare the meal, and the instructions provided says it will take about 30 minutes, which was accurate. The girls were barely into their homework before we were done. And by the time we were done, we had before us a delicious, healthy meal with the freshest ingredients for 4 people. There's a lot of food that comes with each recipe. So what is HelloFresh.com? Really, it's a movement. A meal kit delivery service right to your door from a group that wants to take the planning and shopping for dinner out of your hands. They've already measured everything out, so you don't have to, and there's no waste of food. And besides tasting great, do yourself a favor and try the herby pan-seared chicken. Tomorrow night, we are diving into the Vietnamese marinated steak. HelloFresh.com has a full-time registered dietitian on staff to make sure what you get is healthy. When you sign up, you can choose either the classic box or veggie box. They're currently working on a family box, and you can get either 2, 3, or 4 meals each week. And for our listeners, you get $35 off your first week of deliveries by going to HelloFresh.com and enter LOC when you subscribe. And as they're adding new recipes each week, you can keep dinner interesting, as well as easy, convenient, and great tasting. And I have to say, it was fun for me to cook with my wife and share the experience.
Yes, it's a good thing the ingredients come already measured and separated.
Look, I already said I was sorry. So anyway, just give HelloFresh a try and get $35 off your first week's delivery with our code LOC when you subscribe. You can pause or cancel at any time. What have you got to lose?
Nothing. Instead, you get great meals, a lot of your evening back, and a delicious, healthy dinner for the whole family.
HelloFresh.com.
So yes, they're actually going to start taking it seriously. They're going to hold the position of consul for the entire year.
Wow.
Which is, wow, like,
when's
exhausting.
The last time that's happened? When is the last time?
Yeah, I don't know. Before 49, I guess, probably. When they were holding it and actually in, you know, I think Caesar was consul, but he was off, you know, fighting battles. He wasn't there. And they also brought back the traditional practice of serving 1 month on, 1 month off. People may recall that's... There was always 2 consuls and you always served 1 month on and then you would be the senior consul and then the other person would be the senior consul. I don't know what you... On your off days, you would just go and sit in the Roman baths and have people fondle your balls. I don't know.
I think there was still a certain amount of work. It's just that the other person was the senior consul. But remember when Caesar was consul for the first time... Oh, God. Was it Decimus? I can't remember the name of the guy that was with him. But anyway, because he sat home and was watching the stars and he said bad omen, so we couldn't do any official work. That year was unofficially known as the year of the consuls Julius and Caesar. So yeah. It was a Gaius and Caesar, something like that. Yeah, so you take turns. And again, this to us is not a big deal, but this is literally the hallmark of what it means to be a consul. They're going through some very basic stuff, and Caesar and Agrippa obviously have thought this out, and they are bringing this back, even this thing where the first man in Rome, the unofficial king of Rome, is going through the motion. So it does give it credence. It does give it importance. And again, the people are, one, just happy there's no civil war, and two, yes, this is what my father used to tell me about when he was a lot younger. The consuls did this. We are literally getting back to the old ways. We're getting back to when Rome was great. And, I mean, this is just awesome. So the people, even though it doesn't sound like it's important, this is a very big gesture on their part.
Well, it's the first sign of some semblance of normality returning.
Humility, yeah.
And humility, yeah. And, you know, I think it's not only Octavian showing respect for the traditions of the office, but also his respect for Agrippa.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Octavian started. He was the senior guy in January, but then he handed it over to Agrippa in February. And in February, the traditional 12 lictors carrying the fasces walked ahead of Agrippa.
Yeah.
Now, during the triumvirate, the triumvirs would always have lictors preceding them 24/7. Right. Although apparently we don't know if they had 12 or 24. A dictator was supposed to have 24. There's
right.
No real mention in the histories about how many they had. But, you know, they've now gone to the basic 12 and they've flipped over. I did read, though, something about the fasces that the lictors carried for Octavian were somehow different from the ones they carried for Agrippa, but I didn't get any detail on that. Did you get any different detail?
What I got was during January, when Caesar's the man, he has his 12 lictors walk in front of him to clear a path because you're busy. You haven't got time to get stuck in traffic. I totally appreciate that. When February comes, he has the lictors walk behind him, again, changing things up the way it was. But what I know about that was when in January, he had the full fasces with the bundle of rods and the axe. I'm trying to remember the details now, you know, symbolizing he has the power of life and death over you. And I know that they were modified in February. I don't know any of the details, but I think the axes or the whatever part of it was taken out. So it was just the bundle of rods. So again, they're going back to the way things used to be. And the people are certainly noticing this, and they've got to, on whatever level, certainly appreciate what's going on now.
Well, I think they actually look different in some way, but I don't think the sources say how.
Well, they're his, so he's got they'll probably get some royal purple straps, or who knows?
Do you think that's how they use the fasces, like literally just to hit people on the head if they got in the road? Like just like a hockey stick, just walking, going, get out of the fucking way! Octavian's coming! Get out!
Well, I do know that, and this was, this is between Sulla and Caesar, that somebody did something wrong and they took one of the bundles and they untied the ribbons and they took one of the rods out that made it out and they beat someone over it. But I barely remember this. So there was that symbol of authority, but it also could be used in a very real way to kick someone's ass. But yeah, so that's as far as my memory's taking me.
Well, let's tie a knot around this episode for the beginning of 28 BCE. There is Octavian begins the process of trying to restore some sense of normality to Rome. But we know it's not really normal. We'll see in the next couple of episodes, he has power and authority like no one has ever had before. But he's also going to lay some of it down. He announces at some point in 28 that at the end of the year, he is going to lay down his power.
And I'm going to
restore it all to the Senate.
That's right. These are the people that represent you, the ones that matter, the white guys of Rome. And I'm going to give my power back to you. We just got to get through this year. We got to transition everything. But don't worry. Thumbs up. Smile. The power will go back to the people as it used to be. Thank you.
Welcome!
Books don't do a very good job of this, and why should they?
You take it up the butt.
Bang, bang, bang. Dyke, ass, and ram. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What?
Eating grapes.
Wait. Your dictionary on your computer has candy ass as a word.
Oh my god.
What do you think this is, the Bible, where you can just fucking change the facts left, right, and center?
This is just kind of slow but methodical bullshit. Oh my god.